Greetings to the crew of the Gaian Navigation Experiment, to friends and allies scattered here and there across the planet, and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your nav, John Lash, recording on the morning of October 3rd, 2012. This is nav briefing number 28, and the title is Relay Confirmed. To begin, I want to make a correction in my pronunciation. In the previous audio commentary that was sent out to go along with Crew Notes 21, I'm referring to the title of the Picasso image, which is Dance with Banderillas, Banderillas, B-A-N-D-E-R-I-L-L-A-S. So that is the correct pronunciation, and that's the way that you should say it in your mind when you're looking at that magnificent and enigmatic image. I'm making this nav briefing as a follow-up to the audio commentary just mentioned, and as a way to stay in continuity with the events of this week, which is indeed a momentous week in the Gaian Navigation Experiment. Just last month, we also went through a momentous week. You may recall that Pleromic Relay was complete on the 7th of September, when the moon reached its apogee in conjunction with the open star cluster of the Pleiades. And it's most remarkable to note that 4 days after that event happened, there was a massive explosion on the surface of Jupiter. You can find many images of this explosion. It was observed, actually, by two amateur Japanese astronomers, I believe. As so often happens, it's the amateurs observing the sky who notice the most interesting events. Why? Well, because they're not locked into a rigid paradigm that enslaves their perception or entrains their perception to an archontic vision of celestial mechanics. Amateur observers are more casual, they're more open to spontaneous and anomalous events, and so they are often able to see and observe and detect things that the professionals and the experts who are locked into an archontic mindset completely miss. Now, in keeping with the title of this briefing, Relay Confirmed, it might well be appropriate to consider that this massive, truly massive, and inexplicable explosion in the atmosphere of Jupiter is in some way a confirmation of Pleromic Relay. One could read that in a number of ways. Let me tackle it like this. Pleromic Relay is effectuated by the extension, the extrusion of a 21-strand cable from the center of the galaxy to the Earth. Now, the manner in which this massive cable, which consists of electrical plasma and organic and superorganic light in a triple braid, the manner in which it forms an integrated circuit with the Earth is most fascinating to consider. It does so in quite a precise manner. We in the Gaian Navigation Experiment have the pleasure and the privilege to know that Our diligence in this experiment has led to a most sophisticated concept of galactic alignment, hasn't it? You will recall that galactic alignment, in quotes, has been a huge topic of discussion since the so-called harmonic convergence. Excuse me. The harmonic convergence touted by Jose Arguelles in the summer of 1987. How many books have been written about the galactic alignment that is said to occur at the winter solstice in 2012 in some manner linked to the expiration of a Mayan calendar system? I say a Mayan calendar system because there are at least, I believe, five or six extant Mayan calendar systems, long count and short count calendars. And it's only one of them, the one that was set up according to a stelae in Tikal, I believe, around 300 BC. You can go and check that in the work of John Major Jenkins. It's only that one, which is one of the five or six surviving Maya calendar systems, that expires on that date. In any case, it's interesting to get all the facts on board here, folks. In any case, since 1987, when Arguelles published The Mayan Factor and got his 15 minutes of fame on CNN, many people, increasing numbers of people around the world, increasing numbers of human animals have been anticipating some kind of galactic alignment event. As I pointed out in a previous briefing, it's probable that everything that you have heard or read about the galactic alignment is untrue, fabricated, and astronomically wrong. When I proposed this experiment in June of 2011, I had no idea that our observations and close considerations of events in the solar system would lead to the understanding that we had today, would lead to this truly momentous realization of a concept of galactic alignment that is vivid, observable, palpable, testable, consistent with telluric and astronomic and sidereal events, and on top of it all, incorporates the participation of the Earth as a living and self-conscious superorganism, and on top of all that, this is a concept that presented itself, that emerged in a natural fashion out of our observance of this experiment. It is not a metaphysical contrivance. It was not cooked up and constructed according to any make-believe assumptions, but it manifested itself right before our eyes and right inside our minds. And the celestial proof of this relay, if you will, is now observable in the night sky in the massive formation of the celestial anchor, which stands right outside the door of my room right now, high up in the sky, over the eastern, southeastern horizon. So, me mateys, I would say it is high time on the high seas to congratulate ourselves, and we have every reason to be proud of what has been achieved at this point, at the exact midpoint of the initialization of the conditions of Sophia's correction. And so at the top of the list of events, phenomena, and so forth, that might confirm pleromic relay is the appearance of that magnificent sight in the sky. And I have to tell you, every morning I go out, I was out there yesterday morning, as you know, when I recorded the commentary to Crew Notes 21, out there this morning. And every time I see the sweep of that lower armature and how wide it is, and how the star Procyon, which until now had been an undistinguished star that never fell into place in my many, many years of sky watching, to see how that star Procyon just stands there like ping, it just goes ping, and it just defines the point of the lower armature of that anchor, and the breadth of that armature is so vast, and the extension of the stem from Procyon to Jupiter, and then from Jupiter to the Pleiades, is almost a perfect, exact, straight line. It just appears to be perhaps slightly bent to the right. And I would say, too, that one thing that I have observed since the 1st of September, when this new constellation appeared, is that over and over again, I have a feeling of torque. Torque is a really key term in planetary tantra, you know. Sex is torque. Torque is a twisting of turbulent forces into an articulation of the internal content carried by those forces. And torque appears in this formation of the celestial anchor. Because I noticed that, you know, the upper crossbeam, when it first appeared, of course, is always tilted, but it appeared that the distance on the right side, the length of the crossbar on the right side was shorter than on the left. And that could be viewed as a kind of foreshortening. So it could have been that the anchor was torqued, because actually now the two arms of the slanting crossbar, due to Jupiter's position, are almost exactly equal. So let's say that when the anchor formed, there was a torque in the anchor that twisted one part of the crossbar away so that it appeared shorter. Same thing occurs even very in a slight and subtle way when you look at the lower armature. The symmetry is magnificent. There's no question that Sirius and Mirzam and Castor and Pollux are mirror images. And even though Procyon is as close to the exact center between them as you can get, I had a kind of feeling that there is a slight torque also in the lower armature of the celestial anchor. So all of this is real. All of this is palpable. This is evidence. You see, in the kind of science that we're doing here, which is similar to the science of observation of Goethe, as well as the observational powers of indigenous people, your senses tell you what the cosmos is really doing. And in Goethean and Reichian science, which of course you know provides the guidelines for our experiment and also for planetary tantra in general, senses are reliable. We do not disregard the content of the senses, as science has done, and in doing so has betrayed its own calling. So that's one evidence. And to return to the question of Jupiter, well, let's look into that Jupiter explosion for a moment and consider what it might signify. What actually are the how actually is relay structured? Well, the 21 strand cable from the pleuromic center first reaches the Pleiades. And the Pleiades are located somewhat on the outside edge of the local area of the third galactic arm where the mothership is navigating. So imagine that you're looking down on the curve of a river. Imagine a massive river like the Amazon, and you're looking down on a section of the curve of that river. You're looking down on it, and the river is flowing toward, the river is flowing actually away from you, excuse me. And then there is the mothership in that river sailing upstream toward you. And off to the port or left of the mothership, on that bank of the river, on the outer bank of the river, is where the Pleiades would be located. And they are, as I have noted before, about 26, 25 or 26 degrees offset from the line of sight of the anti-center of the galaxy. So when you look toward the horns of the bull, particularly the southern horn, Sharatan, which is located in about 28 degrees, aligned to about 28 degrees of Gemini in the sign zodiac, you're looking directly opposite the galactic center. You have the galactic center at your back, and you're looking out to the outer reaches of intergalactic space. And the Pleiades are located about offset, about 25 or 26 degrees to the right, that is to say to the west of that line of sight. The massive pleuromic cable crosses the galactic arm and feeds into the Pleiades. And then from that spindle mechanism, which multiplies it from 3 to 21, because it goes through a 7-facet head mechanism. The spindle mechanism has 7 facets or grooves. It now becomes multiplied into a 21-strand cable, and it comes toward the Earth and toward the solar system. Now, just retaining for a moment the conventional mental construct of the solar system, but putting it in nautical terms, we'll say that the mothership is sailing along, and she sails along the rim of the vortex established by the sun, and two other planets, two other smaller ships sail between the Earth and the sun, and Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn sail outside the orbit of the Earth, outside the orbit of the mothership. And this fleet of planets is the solar system moving upstream in the galactic arm. So in some manner, the entire 21-point pleuromic cable feeds in to the solar system. Its ultimate aim is the Bima, the bioelectric magnetic aura of the Earth. And on the 7th of September, all of those 21 strands of the cable were dynamically and actively integrated into the Bima. But before they reached the Bima, there was some kind of dispersion or distribution of the pleuromic cable through the solar system. How exactly that happened, I don't know. To what degree does the sun participate in pleuromic relay? I don't know. I'm operating on the conception that the entire 21 strand cable is meant to be linked exclusively to the Earth. So I'm not imagining that strands of the cable go to other planets. But in some manner, the other planets are certainly affected by the presence of this massive inrush of organic light, super organic light, and plasmatically electrified currents from the Pleroma. Certainly the entire solar system is being affected, and we know already, or science tells us, I should say, that all of the planets in the solar system appear to be heating up for some time now, perhaps in anticipation of this event. Now, in some manner, the one planet that is most intimately connected physically with the dynamics of correction, that being Jupiter, would be most affected. We would expect that Jupiter would be most affected by the incoming of Pleromic Relay. So perhaps what happened, this is just a guess, but I'm wondering if Jupiter didn't just like blow a circuit. You know, it looks like it blew a circuit. Astronomers are now saying that the event that happened on September 11th, 4 days after the completion of Pleromic Relay, was not due to any body crashing into Jupiter. It was due to an explosion in the atmosphere of the planet itself, which some are calling a massive plasmic discharge. So it's possible that there was a plasmic discharge with Jupiter, because Jupiter, due to its huge mass exceeding all the other planets, and due to its intimate connection with the whole relay process, may have reacted to relay by blowing a circuit. And that may indicate that from this point on, we'll have to see how we could follow up this interpretation, but that may indicate that the behavior of Jupiter physically, the observable behavior of Jupiter and its atmosphere, might continue to exhibit some anomalies. Now, you know, I can't keep on top of all the scientific reports that might be relevant to the GNE or might confirm relay, but I do recall you sending me links, and over the summer, I do recall receiving a link that indicated, I received a number of links, and they indicated two things. One, that there would appear to be anomalous sequences of radio signals coming from Jupiter in the course of this summer. Secondly, equally interesting, there appear to be anomalous and strikingly powerful new frequencies emitted from the galactic center. Whenever this happens, of course, they always haul out the old shaggy dog of the black hole, and they explain it on inexplicable. They explain it as inexplicable activity in the fictional entity they call a black hole. But here I propose that we would be seeing scientific confirmation, if you will, that Pleromic Relay is now completed. So let's keep our eyes and ears open, and all our senses as well, for any indications along these lines. Just the last couple of days, I received mail from Dan at Wisdom Stone and from Stacy, both cueing me to the same MP3 file on the NASA site. Now, I don't trust NASA and would never believe anything they do or say, but nevertheless, the fact that they produce reports from time to time does present a kind of evidence, even if the value of that evidence is only to sharpen our critical faculties. So they're reporting on these Earth sounds, which have been recorded by this device, and they, if you go to the NASA site, www.nasa.gov, and you search for Emphasis Chorus, E-M-F-I-S-I-S, Chorus. you'll find that there is a recording of a sound sequence that they are calling the emphasis chorus. And these are sounds made by the earth in radio frequencies. The presenter stresses that they are not acoustic sounds, but in some manner they are convertible into acoustic sounds derived from radio frequencies in the range of 0 to 10 kilohertz. And 0 to 10 kilohertz obviously is well beyond the range of human hearing, but not beyond the range of the hearing of other animals on this planet, such as dolphins, whales, birds, snakes, cockroaches, who knows? Now, go listen to this little clip. And what you hear is kind of whistling and popping sounds that are said to come from the earth and that are said to be derived from these archonic satellites which are sweeping through the Van Allen belts of the earth, actually. My comment on this would be a suggestion for winter reading. The Lost World of the Kalahari by Lawrence Vander Post, who was a close friend of C.G. Jung, by the way, and they both were deeply enamored of Africa. Lawrence Vander Post was a writer who lived for many years with a San Bushman of the Kalahari, an indigenous people who have been by now almost entirely decimated, as I understand. And I think there's another book by Van der Post called The Heart of the Hunter or something like this. In any case, he learned from many nights sitting under the bright sky of the Southern Hemisphere by a campfire, sitting with the Bushmen, elders, the children, families, that the Bushmen consider the stars to be hunters. And when he asked them why, they said, well, that's what they sound like. They sound like hunters, indicating that the Bushmen could hear the sounds of the stars. They could also see the moons of Jupiter with their naked eye, as attested by Lawrence Vander Post. So obviously the Bushmen represent human animals as they should be, and they represent the range of our sensory perceptions to be much greater than the stunted version of most animals on this planet. The Bushmen heard the stars, and what they heard were whistling and popping noises, whistling and clicking noises, which sound very much like the clicking of dolphins, and in certain respects, like the high-frequency sounds of other creatures on this planet, including some insects. When I listen to this little NASA clip, it's a purely an archontic packet of data. Okay. It's collected by archonic devices, it's recorded by archonic devices, and it's converted by archonic devices into frequencies in the range of human hearing. And what do I hear? I hear exactly what the Bushmen describe as the whistling and clicking of the hunter stars. But the remarkable thing is, these sounds are coming from the earth. What does that tell you? Just consider that for a moment. Did the Bushmen say that the earth made sounds? Did the earth sing back to the stars in their clicking and whistling language? I don't know if that's in Lawrence Vander Post. Go read him and find out. Let me know. But it makes perfect sense to me that these sounds would be coming through all the filters of scientific data and artifice, scientific data collection and artifice. Something of the truth, something authentic is coming through all these filters. And the message at the end of the day is that the earth is also a hunter. The planetary mother animal is also a kind of hunter who hunts like the stars and hunts among the stars. and she's now communicating with other hunters out there in the vast reaches of the galactic arms. It's just now a little before 6 here in Andalusia, 6 in the morning, Wednesday, October 3rd. I'm still waiting for Venus to appear over the horizon. She's lagging a little behind, as you know, putting on her makeup. Always takes her a little time. And she does makeup elaborately, after all. That is what the Hetaira do. That is one of their specialties. Cosmetics, makeup, decoration of the female body as an object of beauty. And as I've said before, I'm not the kind of guy that ever regarded women as sex objects or mere objects of beauty, but I do enjoy the company of women who regard themselves as such. Not just as such, and not only as such. That would be a grave mistake, of course. But who regard themselves as such because it's a way to be playful and it pleases them to do so. And Our Lady Venus, she who is the Hetaira of the morning skies right now, she whom the Aztecs called Xochiquetzal, is highly decorated with feathers and ribbons, and coral, and amber, and cowrie shells, and turquoise, and many precious gems which represent, symbolically if you will, in terms of mythological imagery, these adornments of Venus, the Hetaira, represent your own senses. They represent the power and pleasure of your own sensual and erotic sensibilities. It's as simple as that. And you wear your erotic and aesthetic sensibilities like jewelry, like an adornment. That is the adornment of human animals who live in the erotic bliss of the embrace of the planetary animal mother. And it's perfectly natural to be that way. She hasn't come up yet. And you would observe, as you become more skilled and more confident in sky watching, that the speed of Venus through the constellations is quite rapid. And as she moves forward through the constellations, if you wait for her in the morning, she shows up a little later each morning because during the ensuing 24 hours, she has advanced from right to left, from west to east in the natural order of the constellations. And so it takes a little longer for the part of the constellation to rise where she is to be found. Last night, she was approaching Regulus. I expect her to be very close to Regulus and perhaps exact conjunct to Regulus, the star in the heart of the lion, in the next day or so. Of course, you could go and confirm that in an ephemeris in a New York minute. But if you have the privilege to observe it, it's a lot more engaging. Now, to continue this briefing on the theme of confirmations of relay, I'd like to switch to some current material from the world at large. I have a couple of emails from Pedro at North Vortex, and these are extremely revealing indications of the breakdown of the archontic paradigms. Remember that I set up this experiment last year with the anticipation that the wisdom goddess herself was going to bring down the infrastructure, which is actually of the human psyche, because she has total access to the human psyche at the collective level. She is an aeon. She can scan the circuits of the human psyche anytime she wants. the collective psyche of mankind, of humanity. And in doing so, she has applied her intention to bring down and dissolve these massive archontic structures of error and deceit, which are too encumbering and too complex for us to tackle on our own. Are we seeing evidence of this? As far as I'm concerned, especially in the last month, we're seeing massive evidence of this. I would compare it to standing by a dike or a levee when there is a hurricane or very high seas. And suppose that you're standing there looking at the wall of the dike and you see cracks forming and you see it beginning to split open and maybe water leaking out, just leaking out through the cracks. But then at one point, you would see something that suggests a kind of fist being driven through the levee from the other side. And suddenly, a mass of earth, a massive piece of earth, a sod of the levee would fall out. It would be ejected, and then water would gush from the levee. So there's a difference between standing and watching the levee weaken and leak and watching these sods be blown out with the result of water gushing from the levee. And then you know eventually and very quickly that that gushing water is going to gain force, that all the apertures that have been formed, all the fissures are going to combine, and very soon the whole levee is going to go. And I would compare what I'm seeing now in the news, what I can pick up from the light scanning that I do and from the indications that you and the crew send me. I can see that there are massive fissures taking place and water is beginning to gush out of the levee, whereas up till now, it was only leaking through the cracks. And there was a possibility that those cracks could get patched up. And you know what I mean by that. The cover-up, the lies, the distortions of the media, the spin, and things of that sort. Of course, that's still going on. The predators have to exert stupendous efforts through the media and through their various mind control devices to keep the human animal down and to keep the force of divine imagination from bursting out through the faculties of the human species, who have been specifically and intentionally designed to express that faculty, to express that power. Of course, they are running around. They have been running around, as always, trying to patch up the cracks. But now, there are too many gushing holes in the levee and too many massive fissures. And I have noticed this change just in the last month since Palomic Relay has been completed. You recall I mentioned the F word. This is a joke on the internet. According to the SCC, which lays down the standards of what is proper and acceptable to say on American television or radio, you can't say certain words such as fuck. That's the F word, and the F word was not allowed by the FCC. Some of the more astute, and is still not allowed to be spoken on American television. Some of the more astute observers in the alternative media have been joking over the last year about the F word. And they've been saying that the real F word is not fuck, but fraud. And until quite recently, the word fraud could not be pronounced. In fact, it still can't be pronounced in a lot of the mainstream media. So although the banksters on Wall Street and in the city of London and elsewhere, those who are the minions and accessories and enablers of the cabal of international Jewish bankers, have been committing massive fraud, but no one can come out and say so until now. now you're hearing the F word a lot. A lot. And there's a really interesting thing about the F word, fraud, is that as soon as that word is pronounced, it has a magical power to open your eyes and you begin to see that where the fraud is. And so no wonder the predators and the globalist banksters who are largely at the top of the pyramid of orchestrations of evil on this planet, they're just gangster banksters. It's just a mafia of greedy people. Don't make them into gods and don't hype them into being something bigger than they are. It's not surprising that they are terrified of the F word, because as soon as you start saying fraud, as soon as that word gets into the NLP of people, it has a tremendous wake-up power. And it wakes them up to the fact that almost all the bad things that happen in human society happen because they are deliberately intended to happen. It wakes people up to the fact that the game is rigged. The financial game is rigged. Education is rigged. Science is rigged. I said this on MetaHistory over 2 years ago now. Karma is a rigged game. Even karma is rigged. It's all fucking rigged. But you have to be able to perceive the rig. It's like if you're playing cards with someone and they're cheating, you don't know that they're cheating until you actually perceive how they are cheating. By a subtle gesture of the eyes, a subtle movement of the eyes, a subtle movement of the hand, palming a card in a certain manner. Likewise, as soon as you are told that someone could be cheating, you are more prepared to perceive if they are doing so. Imagine if you go sit, and this is a great Kalika analogy. Remember, Kali teaches that all events and behaviors can be mastered by putting them in the metaphor of gaming. Okay, footnote. Imagine that you go and sit down at a poker table to play a game and no one has ever told you the C word, which is cheat. So you're not aware that the other players, some of the other players, and maybe all of them, could be cheating you. But as soon as you have the C word, it gives you the capacity, it primes your NLP for the perception of the act of cheating. The F word is priming the collective NLP for the capacity to perceive the fraud all through every aspect of human endeavor. And this perception is growing massively by the day. So I have a couple of references here from North Vortex, a crew member, to a Chilean man named Pedro Gallete, who is demolishing plate tectonics theory. And he's very accurate in predicting earthquakes because he has a different view that does not follow the standard paradigm of plate tectonics theory. So there again, we see the fraud of science. Plate tectonics theory may be, in some respects, fraudulent. From the same source, I also got a reference to a subject that is dear to my heart. And that concerns, of course, AIDS, HIV. And I saw a wonderful documentary on YouTube showing that HIV is a fraud, that there is no such thing as AIDS, and confirming that to be so by the absolute lack of scientific evidence regarding this entity, the AIDS virus. It's never been detected. It's only been modeled archontically. What you have coming from science is an archontic invention of an HIV virus that does not correspond to anything in nature. And it's also shown in this documentary that people who have been diagnosed with HIV survive. They can get healthy again in a very short period of time. A lot of the difficulty they face is the mental stigma and the social stigma of believing that they have this disease. So as soon as their mindset changes, their physical condition changes. Also, I'd have you know that the fraud of AIDS is a paramount example of the massive fraud perpetrated on this planet by the CEOs of pharmaceutical companies, along with their teams of lawyers and their teams of experts in their laboratories who are producing their drugs. As far as I'm concerned, all of these people, from the CEOs down the line to the laboratory technicians, to their lawyers, to their advertising people in the pharmaceutical business, are guilty of crimes against humanity. And they are as guilty of crimes against humanity as any other war criminal you can name, from Henry Kissinger on down the line. And in the society of human animals where I would live, I can guarantee you that there would be zero tolerance and no mercy for these people, and they would be eliminated in every conceivable way possible. Eliminated. Because they are evil, evil parasites. And it's shown in the documentary that I saw about AIDS that ADT, which is the super expensive medicine invented to cure AIDS, is actually what kills the people. So people are fraudulently convinced that they have a disease, and then they go out and they spend untold amounts of money on the pharmaceutical cure for the disease, which is actually what kills them. Now, if you can get any more evil than that, I don't know how you're going to do it. And all of that is for what? It's just for money. Money. You know, the love of money is the root of much evil. Not all evil, but it certainly is the root of much evil on this planet. So we see the pharmaceutical fraud collapsing. We see the fraud of science collapsing. And a new science geared to the electric universe and plasma cosmology is trying to find its sea legs. You see the fraud of the media collapsing. Recently, a certain woman who worked for CNN, her name is Amber Lyon, L-Y-O-N, has come out and told her story about how she discovered that CNN is nothing but a propaganda machine, and that what people think is news when they watch CNN, for instance, CNN International is the most widely watched news channel in hotel rooms all around the world, of course, and in boardrooms and so forth. What people think they're getting is news. Amber Lyon tells us this is not news. This is constructed content that is paid for by certain nation states and by certain corporations. So CNN is actually an accomplice to these nation states and corporations and the shadowy powers that control them, and is involved in the business, the profitable business of peddling their propaganda. So that fraud is now collapsing as I speak. You'll find that Amber Lyon is getting a lot of coverage on the press. We have other courageous women, whistleblowers, such as Sybil Edmonds, who have been working diligently for years to expose the fraud of national security, the fraud of the Fast and Furious DEA operation that was shipping guns into Mexico, is now being exposed. And quite typically we find, and I make this observation for your, as food for thought, quite typically we find that wherever a fraud is being exposed, whether it be in the pharmaceutical world or in the media or in terms of black ops / security measures taken by the United States of America, there is always a shitload of brutality and murder attached to that fraud. So obviously, if we want to live in a more sane and safe world together, a kinder world and a less dangerous world, then this fraud has to go down, because the fraud is actually operating, among other things, not only as a profiteering platform, but it's also operating as a shield behind which horrible, murderous behavior is being perpetrated. While I'm on the subject of horrendous and deceitful fraudulent behavior associated with massive brutality and murder, let me slide around to my favorite topic of Israel and the plight of humanity. I've been contemplating in the last few days doing something. I don't know if it could be a NAV briefing. I don't know exactly where to put some of the talks that I am now hankering to do. So I have to work that out soon. But I was thinking of doing a talk. I want to do a talk on Jewish ethics. I want to explain what Jewish ethics are and go through the four versions of Jewish ethics, 1.0 to 4.0. And that's pretty illuminating, let me tell you, because it deals with the question of the Jewish problem from a completely neutral and behavioral angle. In other words, it treats the ethics of the Jewish predator class as it would treat those ethics no matter where they came from. You know, could be Eskimo. Suppose that the international bankers running the world, funding both sides of the war, blackmailing whole countries, and doing so many nefarious deeds that you can't keep track of them. Suppose that this cabal of international bankers were Eskimos. It would be the same thing. It doesn't matter that they're Jews, self-designated by that term. What matters is the behavior and the ethical framework used to legitimate that behavior. So I'm preparing that talk, and I was also thinking of calling a talk The End of Humanity. So this notion, the end of humanity, was floating around in my head, J-U-M-A-N-I-T-Y. You could spell it J-E-W-H-U-M-A-N-I-T-Y if you wanted to be snide. But I just spell it J-U. This idea of the end of humanity was floating around in my mind, and guess what comes up 2 days ago? As I'm looking through my YouTube subscriptions. Oh, strange to say, but somebody leaked a document of none other than Henry Kissinger himself saying that in 10 years Israel will cease to exist. Oh, that's interesting. And also a couple of other related articles in the same 24-hour period came up where people were talking about certain defenders and advocates of the terrorist state of Israel. Go back and look at the history of how it was founded. Advocates of the state of Israel are having a hard time peddling their case lately because even they have to confront the possibility that Israel, which is the pimple on the ass of humanity, might come to an end. Somebody might burst that pimple, might burst that zit, and it might all come to a really ugly end. Now, what is this talk? What is this mental rumor floating around in the collective, unconscious and reflected in the mass media? Well, let me give you my best guess. I've said before that the perpetrators, the method of the perpetrators, no matter what race or persuasion they may be, is always the same. It's the gangster method, that you use people while they're of service to you, and when you've accomplished what you want to do with them, you snuff them out. So I have known as far back as writing Armageddon Politics for MetaHistory.org and talking about annihilation theology, I have known that Israel is slated to be wiped out. That's obvious. It's obvious. You even going as far back as the annihilation theology in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's part of that insanity of the Zadokim. You have to destroy something in order to save it. You have to destroy the land and nation that is fraudulently dedicated to the mission of the chosen people, which is itself is a fraud against all of humanity. And you have to set it up as the glorious exception, and then you have to destroy it in order so that it can achieve its purpose. This is the twisted, psychotic logic of the ultimate perpetration game, which is a variation of the victim-perpetrator game, as I've explained in Anon's image. So it's not at all surprising to me that people are smelling the fumes of what is to come. And let me just say something else, my friends, which I consider to be self-evident common sense. There's the Prime Minister of Israel with his Wile E. Coyote cartoon bomb talking to the 191 members of the General Assembly of the United Nations as if they were five-year-olds, and he always talks in a very condescending and patronizing manner because his handler, who happens to be a certain Talmudic rabbi gangster who visits him in the middle of the night, has infected him with the idea of Zadokim perfection. And so he talks down to everyone, and it's becoming painfully obvious. And those of us who don't like to be talked down to by such a miserable excuse for a human animal are getting really, really upset with his performance. But I think that the people who must be getting most upset with his performance must be, guess who? The human animals living in that pitiful shit sand lot called Israel. They must be freaking out. They must be screaming, hanging out of the windows of their houses and screaming. Because what he is doing and what he is proposing regarding the attack on Iran, were that to happen, could have many results and many ramifications. But there's one thing for sure that will happen if Israel attacks Iran, and that is that Israel will be wiped off the face of the earth, and everybody in that benighted country will die. This is so obvious. And so there is the prime minister of the country baiting the world, because the Israelis, of course, are gutless cowards who murder children and use Uzis on kids throwing stones and bulldoze unarmed people while they're sleeping in their houses, cannot fight any kind of battle out in the open. They cannot fight a fair fight. The motto of the Mossad is, by deceit we shall conquer. And so they have to have all their wars fought by proxy. And I'd also like to mention, while I'm on this rant, that I am pretty sure that you're going to hear the word blackmail pretty soon used quite frequently in regard to the Israeli lobby in the United States, and specifically with reference to 9/11. I believe that I am perhaps the first person so far to go on the internet and use the word blackmail regarding 9/11. And I did say that, I believe, in the talks that I did with Judy Wood. Or I might have said it on some other talk I gave during that time, a year and a half or 2 years ago. 9/11 was a fraud. It was not a fraud in the sense that it didn't happen. Certainly, buildings were destroyed at the World Trade Center in New York City. Here's a little test for you, my friends. Do you know how many buildings were destroyed in the World Trade Center in New York City on September 11th? You're going to say, many people would say just two. Of course, they ignore WTC7. The more enlightened people would say, oh, no, not two, three. But the really enlightened people, just go look at the facts. Go look at the map. Seven buildings were destroyed. Seven. And so the fraud of 9/11 has many ramifications. The official government story of 19 hijackers with box cutters is obviously a fraud, and it has been widely ridiculed and brilliantly ridiculed and refuted on the internet countless times now. But the fraud goes deeper. You know, people who see through the fraud of the official version, which claims that two airplanes crashing into the Twin Towers could have caused the destruction of seven buildings on that site, which is fraudulent in scientific terms. People who see through that fraud of that scenario tend to fall into another fraud, which is intentionally nested within that one. You see? The immense power of the 9/11 events is due to the fact that it was an act of psychotic genius systematically constructed to destroy the logical and critical faculties of the human mind as much as it destroyed those buildings in New York and Washington on that day. Even more so, the destruction to the critical and logical faculties of human judgment has been even greater. And the way that 9/11 PSYOP works is that it allows you to see through one obvious fraud so that you can fall into another one. And the other fraud is the fraudulent explanation that the destruction at the World Trade Center was due to demolitions planted in the building. And it was a controlled demolition of the building by explosives pre-installed in the building. Now, it's my view that this is also a fraud, a very cleverly constructed fraud. But the purpose for this fraud is to blackmail those parties in the United States government who colluded with Mossad and certain factions in the Israeli government, which is to say the Israeli mafia terrorist racketeering organization. It is a blackmail based on that collaboration. So there were principally two parties involved in pulling off 9/11, the U.S. neocons and the Israeli Mossad faction. And when you see through the second fraud, what comes to light is that there is an act of blackmail contained within the 9/11 events. But you can't see how that blackmail works if you accept the alternative scenario that the buildings were destroyed by a controlled demolition of pre-implanted explosives. I believe there were some pre-implanted explosives, and I believe that they were placed in such a manner as to make it appear that there was a controlled demolition by pre-implanted explosives. And there was, in fact, a controlled demolition. But I follow Judy Wood's analysis. In my view, that controlled demolition was caused by another kind of weapon. And the proof that it was another kind of weapon can be found lavishly in her books and can also be found if you take two or three steps back from the crime scene in New York and ask yourself these two questions. First, if explosives were systematically planted in these buildings in the months previous to 9/11, Were they planted in all seven buildings? Because seven buildings were demolished on that site. The second question is, if the destruction on that site at that day, I'm not even talking about the Pentagon, which is obviously another fraud, because no airplane was seen, no airplane was filmed, and no passenger airplane could possibly have created damage consistent with the evidence of that site. But just talking about the World Trade Center, ask yourself the second question. If there was a controlled demolition due to conventional explosives of some kind, even perhaps nuclear, pre-installed in the buildings, then how do you explain the massive lack of debris? That is to say, about 85% of the debris that should be there is not there. And how do you explain all the anomalous effects lavishly illustrated in Judy Wood's books? And how do you explain the coring out of buildings in an extraordinary manner that does not in any way conform to the behavior of explosives, whether they be conventional or nuclear? So what I'm saying to you is that the fraud of 9/11 is something that you have to get to the absolute bottom of. You can't go halfway or two-thirds of the way into the fraud. You have to go all the way into the fraud. And I strongly maintain that you cannot go all the way into the fraud of 9/11 unless you take on board Judy Wood's explanation that the massive destruction at that site was caused by the use of non-conventional DEWs, directed energy weapons. But it was disguised to appear as a controlled demolition by conventional weapons. Why? Get this, folks. The neocons went into the 9/11 operation in close complicity with their Mossad / Israeli mobster gang of arms dealers and genocidal psychotics. And the complicity is absolutely clear at every point along the trail of evidence. Because Israelis were in charge of the security on that day at the buildings and so forth, they were in charge of the telephone communications, they were in charge of so many things, they were able to rig it so that the event could happen. So the complicity is very clear, but the complicity was torqued. Because the neocons, who made a bargain with the Israelis, got more than they bargained for. Suppose that the neocons simply wished to have two airplanes, which were actually guided drones disguised as airplanes, another fraud, crashed into the trade towers, and suppose that all the neocons wanted was a couple of burning skyscrapers and a few hundred people dead, because that's all they would need for a Pearl Harbor kind of event. So they went into a deal, this is my scenario, assuming that they had an agreement with their Israeli Mossad mafia partners that it would just be the destruction of the towers at the upper stories, a spectacular film, a spectacular event witnessed by the eyes of the world. And that would be enough for the neocons to then proceed with their program, which they are still proceeding on. But lo and behold, they got a big surprise on that day. And the surprise was that the Israeli Mossad gangsters are in possession of a weapon that could wreak levels of destruction that were 1,000 times what the neocons wanted or needed for their purposes. And so, with diabolical glee, the Mossad Israeli mafia used these unconventional weapons to the surprise of their neocon accomplices. And then when the day was done, they sat down with their neocon accomplices and they said, look, if you don't do what we want and radicalize the entire Middle East by pretending to turn Arab countries into democracies so that there can be an absolute polarization between the Arab countries in the Middle East and Israel, so that Israel can have its final justification to make war on those countries, then we're going to tell the American people, we're going to leak the information to the world and the American people that will prove that you, neocons, in the shadow ops area of the United States government, destroyed these buildings by controlled demolition. Which, of course, is not the truth. The truth is that they were destroyed by directed energy weapons, a superior form of unconventional weapon. But it is enough that it was made to appear to be an inside job, because the inside job jargon, the inside job jingle that everyone keeps singing is the evidence that the United States side of 9/11, the perpetrators on the United States side, the neocons, are being blackmailed by the other side. And that is why the United States Army, the United States military, over the last 10 years, and the whole United States government, and the Senate, and the House of Representatives, have been held hostage in a blackmail situation by a foreign terrorist state. And all of that fraud is coming down right now. And I strongly suspect that by the end of this year, by December of 2012, that fabled and anticipated moment, that the fraud of 9/11 itself will collapse, along with the fraud of humanity and of the false story of the Holocaust, that is the great historical lie perpetrated on humanity in the 20th century, and the great historical lie that is consistent with all the other frauds that are leading humanity into war and conflict and self-annihilation for the pleasure of a bunch of gangsters. So those are some of my comments. I didn't expect to get on that rave about 9/11, but I think it is appropriate. And the final thing I would say in regard to frauds collapsing in front of our eyes is that I just heard today that a couple of the big companies or corporations who would be sponsoring the presidential debates between Romney and Obama were very distressed by the exclusion of this guy, Gary Johnson, who was, by the way, governor of New Mexico when I used to live there. Very distressed by that, and they have come out and said, in so many words, that the whole two-party system is nothing but a phony dog and pony show, that the debates are invalid. They are, in fact, a fraud, and so they are not going to sponsor the debates. So there's another example. The F word is rampant. Fraud is collapsing. And that would be a confirmation that Sophia is achieving her aim to defeat the Archons. But we also have a confrontation with the Archons, and we also have a particular role to play in her correction in the remaining year and a half. So the challenge of our experiment now is to understand that role more clearly, and specifically to see how we can learn the operations of pleromic relay and apply them to the great challenge facing the world today, the challenge of a reality shift out of fraud and error into beauty, freedom, and pleasure. Signing off for now, I wish you all safe passage.